Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am super excited and honored because tonight I have such a special guest, easily the most famous guest I've ever had on the show. You know her as the horror chick over at Dread Central. Please welcome Heather Wixon.
Wow, I don't even know what to say after that. That was quite an intro.
I thought about going bigger, but I was trying to I was trying to be modest. I could add some timpani in. I could go crazy.
I would either like angel singing or maybe a chorus of Hallelujah.
I can make both. I can put them on top of one another, and it will be just this angelic cacophony.
Well, hopefully that won't be. Hopefully that won't be overkill.
Angelic Cacophony, by the way, was my MySpace name. So Heather is on the show tonight to talk about the state of horror movies, because I thought, wow, who better to talk about the state of horror movies than a horror movie expert? Heather, do you want to talk a little bit about some of your background in terms of how long you've been ruling the internet when it comes to horror?
Sure. So basically, I don't know if I'd say ruling, but I'm doing my darndest to at least try to make a difference. I started off about 6 years ago, actually, this month, just doing some reviews for a smaller independent site called TerrorTube. And then for about a year and a half, I stayed with them. And then around 2009, I took myself to Sundance to support a little movie called Grace that was there. And because of that, I ended up getting a email one very late night from Steve Barton at Dread Central asking me if I was in Sundance and what I wanted to do some coverage for him. I was totally floored, being that Dread Central is, you know, one of the top sites. And so I was like, sure. And one thing led to another, and I ended up coming on there full time. And then about 3 months later, I ended up sort of having a total life fallout. I went through a divorce and I lost my job in Chicago. So I decided what better time to move to LA and try to take a crack at this whole writing thing. So that's what I did. And I wake up every single day and I can't even believe this is my life. I'm very, very lucky. So
that is so awesome. Now you are writing at Dread Central. You have your own site, which is thehorrorchick.blogspot.com.
Yes, that's where it's kind of like I do a lot of my Dread stuff shows up there, but I also kind of do my own little ramblings here and there. I'm also kind of a wrestling nerd, so every once in a while I like to put wrestling stuff up.
Like still modern day wrestling or like old school wrestling?
A little of both, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
I ask only because I'm currently drinking out of a giant Rowdy Roddy Piper cup.
Oh, that is awesome. You know, he's like the one person I've never gotten to interview. And I swear, like, before I die, I will get to talk to Roddy Piper.
He's the coolest.
He really is.
And now in addition to writing, you have made short films. You have your own film festival. Stop me when I'm getting some of this wrong. Or
no, those are both right. I only did one short film, though.
Okay.
And it was kind of my one and done. And again, it's sort of wrestling themed.
Was Paper, Scissors, Rock, right?
Paper, rock, scissors.
Paper. I'm sorry. Listen.
Oh, it's okay.
I had the words. was that to be an entry into ABCs of Death?
No, I just kind of did that for fun.
Okay.
I had a friend of mine write it up, and it was based sort of on an experience that I had with my boyfriend. It sounds kind of silly, but I have a cardboard cutout of The Rock.
Nothing silly about that. Everybody has one of those.
Of course. And if they don't, they should. It should come standard anytime you get like a new house or something. That should be part of your like housewarming gift. So, I had this cardboard cutout, and where my apartment was in my first apartment in LA, he kind of was like watching everywhere you went, and he would kind of freak my boyfriend Brian out all the time. And he's like, I swear to God, he's watching me. And he was like, I can see him from the bathroom. He's walking, you know, he's like looking down the hallway and he's like in the living room. So it was just kind of one of those things where, you know, we kind of were joking about like, you know, what if there was a killer cardboard cutout? And sort of one thing led to another, and that's kind of like how story happened, but yeah, so it was kind of cool. I got to move, you know, kind of got to merge horror and wrestling together, which was kind of awesome.
Nice. And do you want to talk about your film festival a little bit?
Yeah. It was one of these things. It's sort of, I was really, really, really lucky. Mike from Flashback Weekend, he works with the Movico Theaters in Rosemont, and he offered me a theater for a weekend here in Thousand Oaks. And I was like, okay. I didn't know what to do with it, but I had it. And, you know, out in LA, and I'm sure it's the same in like other cities, you know, there's a lot of horror festivals like in the fall, because that's like where everybody wants to get creeped out and spooky and all that kind of stuff. But in the spring, there really isn't. So I kind of wanted to do something different and kind of, you know, basically start my own little festival. So I did. And so we had our first festival in March, and I did it in about 6 weeks.
Wow.
So yeah, it was pretty nuts, but I was really, really lucky because I reached out to a lot of really great independent distributors like Magnet and IFC and Tribeca and Exhilarator, and got some really great films. And then I reached out to a lot of independent filmmakers that I already knew to kind of sort of be able to showcase those guys too. And it was awesome. Like we had, for only having about 4 weeks of promotion, we had over like 500 tickets sold for the weekend.
Wow.
And yeah. And my favorite story was that there was this teacher that came, and she came for the first day. She bought an all day pass, and every movie she would come and tell me like how, you know, her thoughts and stuff. And then, you know, Sunday morning I'm there, and she walks in and she's like, yeah, I was supposed to like go to class, you know, go to school today and grade papers, and I decided to come here. So she bought another pass on Sunday, and again, like, was so enthusiastic about everything. And for me, like, that made it all worth it. Like, I was like, that's awesome. Like, it was so cool to see people, you know, that I knew, mm-hmm. but to kind of make that influence like on somebody I totally didn't know. Like,
yeah.
I didn't, you know, and that to me was really, really cool. So I'm starting to gear up for our second year now already. So, and we're actually going to be doing submissions this year. So I have to kind of get all that in place, but yeah, I should be doing some announcements on that probably in like mid September.
That's very, very cool. So everybody should check out where Dread Central, or should they check your site for the announcements?
Yeah. They'll probably be over at the Horror Chick blogspot. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
And now you just mentioned one thing that I want to get to in a second, cause you just brought up Flashback Weekend, which is coming up, and we'll talk mm-hmm. about that. But 2 weeks ago, I think, from when we recorded this, you just hosted, or you were a guest, what do they call that, on a panel at San Diego Comic-Con for Masters of the Web. You are yeah, a master. I've never spoken to a Master of the Web before, so this is actually pretty exciting.
Well, thank you. They gave me a crown and wow. a nice cape. No. It was, I was actually a panelist. It was, actually themed for Your Next, which is from Lionsgate, also tying into Flashback.
Yes.
But yeah, so it was really, really cool. Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett, they kind of moderated it.
Okay.
And so kind of gave the journalists kind of a chance to talk, which was kind of fun for us. Like I was probably ready to throw up before I walked up there. You and I have known each other, you know, 20 years ago. And,
yeah.
you know, I'm a kid who grew up in a trailer park. Like, these things don't happen. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, like, I remember 5 years ago desperately wanting to go to Comic-Con. And I couldn't afford it. And
yeah.
all of a sudden, 5 years later, I'm on a panel. And it was the most surreal thing. But, you know, and honestly, like, it wouldn't have happened, you know, had I not had the opportunities with Dread. And, you know, that I just – it still kind of floors me that I was actually, I'm like in the program, which is so weird. Like
I saw your name on the website and everything.
It was, yeah. I'm like, that's like one of those things you like, you know, if this was like, you know, 10 years ago, you'd put it up on the refrigerator or something. So
I probably still would. I might actually, I might print it out and just put your name on my refrigerator. And now coming up, is the annual Flashback Weekend in Chicago, which is a horror convention that happens every year, and you are one of the hosts of that this year as well?
I am, yeah. This is my third year getting to come back and be a co-host along with Steve Procopy from Ain't It Cool and Nick DiGiulio from WGN. To be honest, I used to go to Flashback as a fan, like
yeah.
pretty much since the beginning. And, you know, again, being with Dread, it sort of afforded me the opportunity to, you know, get to go to Flashback and, you know, get to be a part of it, which is so surreal. Like it's really cool. And it's fun for me because it's like my Chicago world gets to mash with my LA world. And I love that. Like, it's really fun to see that. So
that is super cool. That's happening August 9th through 11th in Rosemont. And I know George Romero is going to be there. They're having a reunion of the entire cast of Dawn of the Dead, which is unbelievable. They're doing a 35mm screening of Night of the Living Dead. They're having a reunion of Pet Sematary. Almost everyone. Almost. And I say almost because missing is Fred Gwynn. May he rest in peace. And Zelda. And by the way, thank God Zelda's not going to be at the reunion, because I couldn't come anywhere near that place if Zelda was going to be anywhere near the reunion. We may end up getting into this later. I've talked about this on the podcast before. Zelda in Pet Sematary is the single scariest thing I've ever seen. I love horror movies. I don't generally get scared by them. I cannot handle when Zelda like sits up in the bed and then comes running towards the camera. I cannot handle that scene.
I will say that is probably one of the more intense moments of that movie. Like that is, I'm not a fan of the moment either.
I can't
also, you know, the fact that, it's that no good can come of that.
And you are hosting a screening of Rocky Horror with Patricia Quinn as well, right?
I believe so. Yeah, that is the rumor. So I'm really excited. This is probably too much information, but I have only one tattoo, and my tattoo that I have is from the lips from Rocky Horror Picture Show. So getting to host that is like, I mean, seriously, it's like a nerd dream come true. Like,
I've never actually seen Rocky Horror in a theater, like with that whole group experience. I remember it was growing up, you couldn't get it. Like, it would show at certain second run theaters near me, but I was too young. And then when I was in junior high, I think is when they finally put it out on VHS. And I remember going to the video store to reserve it so I could get it the day it came out. And I sat there with my friend and we wrote out all the stuff that people do. And we sat in his living room and like threw toast at his TV. Because I just wanted to do all the stuff. But I've never actually like been in the group experience and seen Rocky Horror.
Oh, wow. Actually, it's really funny. Sort of to go for a little flashback moment. When I was 10, Jenna's dad, remember Jenna? Her dad took us to Rocky Horror. And it was that theater that was in Mount Prospect.
That's the one I was thinking of, the Prospect.
Yes,
I think. Yeah.
The Prospect. And I actually fell asleep, I think, halfway through it. But I just remember, like, sitting in that balcony. And I remember because they had the little ashtrays in the balcony, like, in the little seats.
Right.
Like, that was back when they still had that. And I remember playing with that, like, and then I fell asleep. But it was so crazy. Like, I had never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was really cool. But, yeah, so I get to do that with Patricia, and that's, like, super awesome.
That's awesome. And I know she's there also as part of which I have to kind of laugh at the phrasing of this, but they're advertising it as the Lords of Salem reunion. But that movie just came out a couple months ago, so I feel like it's a little soon for them to be reunited. I mean, it's great that they're all going to be there, but I just feel like the word reunion is a little strange in this instance.
I know. Well, I think it's kind of interesting also just because, you know, the sort of the stories behind the production of that movie, how, you know, Rob had a lot of people on that cast, and then in the final movie, you know, they're nowhere to be found. So it's really interesting, you know, behind that.
I don't know many of the stories. I just, when I saw the movie, there's this random shot of Barbara Crampton, and I was like, oh, great, Barbara Crampton's in this. And then she's not in the rest of the movie. There's just one random shot of Barbara Crampton.
I know. And that's really funny because I adore Barbara. And I was really lucky last year. She actually came down from, I think she's in the San Francisco area, and she came down to LA and did an interview with us. And we talked about like all kinds of old animator stuff and all that kind of stuff. But I talked to her a little about Lords of Salem. And it's funny because there's a whole story to all those characters that you see in that flashback.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Like, I would love to see the full version of that movie. Like, I'm still actually fascinated by Lords of Salem. I wouldn't say that I hated it, like, because I'm still thinking about it. And I saw it like, you know, 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, I really liked Lords of Salem. It might be my favorite horror movie so far this year, but I'm probably getting ahead of myself. We're going to talk real quick about what I'm going to ask you what you've seen lately. We can keep it horror themed if you want. But first, I have to tell, is it okay if I tell the poster story?
Yes, that's okay. I just explained it earlier, and it was funny because it was just like that moment, and it was funny because Jenna emailed me, and she's just like, "Are you going to talk about the poster?" Everybody knows the poster. It's like it's the story. So yes, please go on with the poster story.
Well, I just want to introduce because you had made mention of the fact that we've known each other for a long time, and we haven't necessarily talked for all 20 of those years, but we were introduced to each other through a mutual friend whose name is Jenna, who you've talked about. 20 years ago, I think we were both in junior high, and I want to say that the reason that Jenna sort of introduced us was because she knew that we were both way into horror movies. And at the time, I didn't know anybody who was as much into horror movies as I was. So we would talk on the phone about Freddy Krueger and stuff. And, it must have been around Christmas. And Jenna came to school. This is, we were at junior high, with a poster that was wrapped up from you. And this is from Heather. Wow, that's super nice. Okay, great. And I take it home and I open up the poster and it's this girl in a swimsuit. And I was like, that's interesting. Okay. Maybe she thought I would like this. I don't know. So then we talked on the phone and it was a while that you were saying, did you like the poster? And I'm saying, yeah. And it's this weird, like, Three's Company confusion because I think you deliberately gave me this poster of a girl in a swimsuit, and we're talking about it. And
be honest, did Larry run through in a towel?
So finally, I think you figure out, like, wait, what? Somehow it came out that what you had intended to give me was a poster of Freddy Krueger.
Yes.
But that this was in the old days where you flip through the posters and then you take it out of the slot on the bottom and the wrong poster was in the slot or whatever. So you had taken the wrong one and given me this girl in a swimsuit thinking that you gave me a poster of Freddy Krueger. But we talked about it for 15 or 20 minutes without realizing that neither of us was talking about the same thing.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. And, you know, and here I was like, oh, I was so excited because I had just gotten the Freddy Krueger poster and I thought it was so cool. And I was like, finally, somebody else gets it. And I was like, okay, I remember, and I went to Venture of all stores.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Venture. And I remember I was so excited. Like, it was in the right bin. I pulled it out and I thought I was just being, you know, too cool for school. And then I was like, I totally just messed that up.
Well, listen. I mean, it was still cool.
You were a teenage boy, and it's a chick in a bikini, right. So it could have been worse.
I just assumed you were very progressive. And that cracks me up still when I think about it. So we did bond over our love of Freddy Krueger and our love of women in swimsuits. So let me ask you this, which is something that I ask all the time. Have you seen anything good lately?
Yes, actually, I was down at Comic-Con. I actually got to see for the second time, and I'll say it holds up just as much the second time as it did the first. And this also, you know, kind of ties into flashback, You're Next.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I will say emphatically, or I will say very, what's the word I'm looking for? I will make this declarative statement. You're Next is awesome. It lives up to the hype and then some. Just go in ready to have some fun because there's going to be a moment, and you'll know it when you see it, that everything changes in that movie. And it's like, it just goes from being great to being fucking awesome.
Nice.
Like, it's so good. And that's the thing. Like, I like those guys as filmmakers, and this movie is so different than anything else that they've done. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, and I talked to Adam about this when we were at South by Southwest, and I said to him, I'm like, it feels so like new, but it also feels, you know, very much like your first movies, you know, because it has sort of that energy to it. And I really, really liked it. And I love the fact that Lionsgate is so behind this movie. They're being really, really inventive with the different things that they're doing. And for me, like, I'm a nerd for that kind of stuff. Like, I can so vividly remember, like, the Blair Witch campaign or the Saw campaign. Like, I love that kind of stuff. So to see them doing really cool stuff for Your Next, like, it's awesome, and it's totally warranted.
Nice. I have been reading, and the movie's been around for, like, 2 years, right?
It was. And the thing is, it was like, you know, with Lionsgate, you know, they're a studio, so they've got a slate. And, you know, this is a movie that it's going to fit perfectly into sort of that August carrying into the fall, you know, time of year. Cause yeah. it's, you know, everyone's kind of settling in for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, it's always a very crowded, you know, marketplace. It's, oh God, it sounds so nerdy to just say, but it really is. And so I think that they had to kind of take their time with it. And I think in some ways it's almost better that they did, because I think with that initial boom that they came out of, I think it was TIFF where they premiered, mm-hmm. But I think if they would have like come swinging out of the gate with that first boom, I don't know that it would have had as much impact as it is now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've been reading about it for a while and people kind of have been going crazy for it. And I was starting to get worried. And I know I'd expressed this to you in an email that, oh gosh, I don't want to get overly excited because then I don't want it to disappoint me. But I've been hearing about it and it's supposed to be great. And then that trailer came out. And as soon as I saw that trailer, I'm like climbing out of my skin to see that movie because that.
Yeah.
That trailer is so goddamn good. That trailer is maybe better than any horror movie I've seen this year. I just love that trailer.
Yeah,
that's going to be showing at Flashback Weekend. So I'm very excited to see that.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I'm thrilled that I get to see it for a third time and with like a Chicago audience. Yeah. Like, that's just going to be super awesome. Because that's the thing, like, I like about Flashback is, like, the crowds are always really into it.
Yeah.
And it's always a really good, like, screening experience. So that movie is going to kill. I'm excited.
Me too.
Yeah.
Anything besides your next?
I'm trying to think of what I've seen recently that's horror related. I really liked, and it's doing well, so that's also really good, is The Conjuring. I really liked that.
Yeah, that was good. That was... I've been reevaluating James Wan ever since I saw that movie because I've always liked him maybe a little bit more than I've liked his movies, if that makes sense. Like
when he has an enthusiasm and it shows.
Yeah, and like when Dead Silence came out, it's like, oh, I know you're trying to do something and you're definitely trying to do something different from Saw, but the movie didn't quite click with me. And then even Death Sentence, it's like, oh, you're trying to do something different. That's great. And it's almost there. And I liked so much of Insidious. I felt like it went a little bit off the rails at the end. And I felt like The Conjuring, for me, was his first movie that just clicked the whole way through.
Cool. It's sort of funny because I'm actually sort of I love James's movies.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is I actually hated the first Saw. Like I really didn't like it. Like when I first saw it, I was just, I mean, I remember ripping it apart, like going home in the car. And now that I've like sort of reevaluated, especially within like the context of the sequels,
yeah.
Like, you know, there's actually, you know, a lot of my problems that I had with the first one, the second one really stepped up and kind of made the first one better in my eyes in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to do a disservice to James or Lee because, you know, honestly, like I go back and I look at it now and I'm like, God, you know, it's one of those things, I think, like, when you watch a movie, it can be very subjective. Like, if you're just not in the right frame of mind or mm-hmm. if you have certain expectations, like, it won't click. And then, you know, going back and watching it, like, I've actually, you know, really loved it now, you know, because I've sort of appreciated and kind of, like, taken it in. Like, it's not a, you know, it's not going to be, like, the thing. But it's one of those movies, and again, I'm sort of one of these people that I feel like the Saw franchise kind of gets crapped on a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody wants to give it that quote unquote torture porn label, which is like just seriously like nails on a chalkboard to me when I hear the words torture porn.
Yes.
I hate that term.
Me too.
But yeah. And I just don't think that that movie got enough credit for what it really did. And I think it was just embracing R-rated horror again because everything had gotten so safe.
Right.
You know, we had Scream. And, but nothing real. And, but again, that wasn't really that violence that, you know, was sort of, you know, in 80s horror. And, you know, and so I think people sort of forget that, you know, yeah, you know, everybody wants to say that the quote unquote torture porn knockoffs came and they did. But I think also in a way, we also got some really, really incredible R-rated films that, you know, I don't know that necessarily would have been as wide had Saw not done as well.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So I think, you know, it's interesting. And I, you know, and I'm one of those, like, again, Dead Silence, I liked a lot of it when I first saw it, but I've actually come to like kind of like it even more now.
Yeah.
Sort of. It's one of those, like I go back and I watch them, but honestly, I loved Death Sentence when I saw it.
Yeah.
I totally did. I really did. I thought it was fun. And for me, it's like after seeing Death Sentence and kind of seeing James progress as a filmmaker,
mm-hmm.
like I'm so ridiculously excited to see what he's going to do with Fast 7. Like there are no words.
Yeah, me too. I think that's a great choice, and it's really interesting, especially with The Conjuring. I think he's always been a confident director, but I really mm-hmm. felt like with The Conjuring, like, that movie is so assured in every step. Like, there's such confidence in the way that he directed that movie that it makes me even more excited for Fast 7, because obviously he's really, really in command.
Absolutely.
I have his entire catalog, like, in a stack on my shelf, because I'm going to go through and watch them all again now, especially looking to sort of reevaluate him and his movies, because I guarantee I go back and...
Yeah, now that I've told you you're wrong, or...
No, I had this planned already, because I guarantee I like all of them more now than I did before. I've talked about this before on the podcast, but we did a whole show once on the Saw franchise, because I had a similar experience where I saw the first one, I didn't love it, and I didn't even love the second one. It wasn't really until the third one where I started to think, like, oh, they're really... Something's happening here, and there's this crazy continuity, and I'm fascinated by where this series is going. And then I became a fan, and then I would go back and watch the original movies and like those more, and now I do consider myself a fan of the franchise. And it's interesting because Saw is one of those movies that's so good at being what it is that it gets credit for being way more violent and gory than it actually is, because if you watch it now, especially in comparison to like the unrated cuts of the sequels, which really kind of double down on some of the gore, the first one is like totally tame by comparison.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. It's like, if you really sort of take out of the horror context of it all, it's a crime thriller,
right,
at heart. You know what I mean? Like, it, for me, it was never about like the violence. I mean, the violence itself was sort of necessary to put those people in those situations. To me, I never saw anything in those movies as gratuitous. It just wasn't something we were used to seeing.
Right.
You know, and I think that's why people blew it out of proportion. And it's, you know, for me, like I kind of like, my favorite sequel now is probably 6.
I was like, just going to ask, do you have a favorite and a least favorite? 6 absolutely is mine as well, but continue.
Yeah. And I would say probably 7's my least favorite.
And you are correct again.
Yeah, and I hate to say that because I believe Marcus and Patrick worked on both of those. But I just, like, for me, 6 worked so, I mean, like, seriously, like, I remember almost audibly cheering at moments in 6. Like, yeah. It was that good. And I thought Tobin Bell was so great in it. Like, I thought they really gave him something that time. And then 7 for me, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it just didn't click or if my expectations after 6 were so high. But honestly, like, I haven't gone back and watched 7, so it's one of those I probably should.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it did rip the skin off of the dude from Linkin Park, so it had that going for him.
And it killed that girl from Scream Queens.
Oh, yes, it did.
I wonder if the reaction to 7 also was because 6 was so good and it really seemed like the series was poised to really go out on a high note. And I know there were some problems with 7. I know the director didn't necessarily even want to be there because he was going to get hired to do the next Paranormal Activity. And then somebody said, no, we have you under contract. You got to make Saw. So maybe his heart wasn't in it. I thought the premise was so great, this idea of this support group for Jigsaw victims, I thought was so great. And I thought, what a great way to tie in all the past movies. I saw it, I think, the day or the weekend it opened, and I have never gone back to it.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those, like, you know, I tend to do a nice Saw marathon like every 2 years.
Yeah.
So I'll probably go back and watch it this year and just kind of see if I can make peace with it or not.
Now, you brought up Marcus and Patrick, and you're talking about, I'm going to get their last names wrong. Is it Marcus Dunstan?
And Patrick Nispa? Melton, yes.
Okay.
Melton.
Melton.
Yeah.
Okay. I got that wrong. I apologize. Okay. Because I just saw their sequel.
The Collection.
What are your thoughts?
Oh my God. I loved it.
Okay.
Because I liked The Collector. Okay. But here's the thing for me. And again, we spoke about our mutual appreciation for how amazing Point Break is.
Yes.
So if you put Lee Turgeson in anything, I'm there. I'm so there. And I loved the collection. I thought, like, I liked the collector a lot. I thought it did some interesting things. I didn't love it. It, you know, it was good to me. But what they did with the collection, like, I freaking loved it. Like, that opening scene.
That was crazy.
Oh, my God. I couldn't even believe it. And I don't know if you've watched it on the Blu-ray, but they have the little Super 8 film that's at the end.
Oh, okay.
That's like a little bit of a stinger. And for me, or it's like a deleted scene or something like that. But it was awesome. Like, I thought, like, if you go and watch that, and for anybody who hasn't seen it, I'm not going to ruin it or anything. You should just watch it. It's really cool. And I think it sets up a really, if they get to do a third one, a third movie. Like, they did a really, really cool thing with it. I think it was like shot on like 8mm over a weekend.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I loved the collection. I thought it was a hell of a lot of fun.
I will maybe need to watch it again. I didn't.
It's okay. I have weird taste. Here's the thing. I also loved No One Lives.
I haven't seen No One Lives yet. I really wanted to. And it played for like a weekend out here. So I didn't get a chance to see it.
Yeah. We were like 2 of 8 people in the theater. So, you know. But I'll tell you, like. Seriously, because I watched it for the first time, like, as a screener to do, like, interview prep.
Yeah.
But then I went and actually watched it at, like, an AMC. And it was – I loved it on the big screen. Like, seriously, it has – what I appreciate about it, it is just balls out, like, everything. Like, there is this one moment – and, again, I'm not going to ruin it. But you'll see it and you're just going to be like, whoa. Like, it's so iconic that, like, I wish the movie had, like – sort of better traction or people could see it for what it was.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't high art or anything like that. It wasn't trying to be a think piece. It was just trying to be like a totally fun in your face horror movie. And it, for me, it totally succeeded. And, you know, I'm more of a fun horror fan. Like, I'm not into going to watch horror movies so I can feel bad about things.
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same way.
Yeah, I have no interest in Martyrs. Like, it's just not a movie I'm ever going to sit through.
I continue to avoid, like, that and a Serbian film. And there's a list of stuff that I just have to avoid. I saw earlier this year, I saw The ABCs of Death. And that movie defines mixed bag to me. There's some sequences that are totally forgettable. There's some that work and are fun. And then right in the middle of it, and I don't remember who directed it or what letter it is, but there's this one sequence where a guy is basically keeping his wife prisoner and he's injecting her with like drain cleaner or something. I mean, it's so ugly and nasty, and it's so at odds with the other 25 shorts that I have a hard time getting through it. And I can't fault that director because he didn't know what everybody else was doing. And if somebody said, make something, you know, make a horror film, like, okay, that's horrifying to him. And horror movies can do that. I, like you, those are not the ones that I want to seek out, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I appreciated ABCs of Death for its ambition
because
nobody had ever done anything like that. And to be honest, like, mixed bag is probably the nice way of saying saying things. Like, and I feel bad saying that because it was at the festival, but I thought it was something incredible that should be on the big screen.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, my feeling. Like, you know, I want to give people something that they're never going to see on a big screen again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but that being said, I'm actually really excited about two because I think now that they've sort of seen, you know, I'm kind of hoping, I don't know what they're going to do for two, but I'm kind of hoping they give them some kind of a parameter just because I feel like, you know, if they just have an idea, you know what I'm saying? Because I just feel like it might flow better.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, that could just be wishful thinking.
All right, so let's talk about, you know, I have this generic idea to talk about sort of the state of horror films, and we've touched upon all these ideas already, but I just kind of want to get your take on where horror is at now, because I feel like it's in a really good place for a lot of reasons, but at the same time, it's a little bit lost right now, and that's okay. I don't mean lost in a bad way, but you know, horror was kind of dead for a lot of the 90s, and then the 2000s it came back, but it was always within these movements where we had sort of the J-horror movement in the early 2000s, and then we had sort of the, you know, for lack of a better term, I'm just going to use the generic sort of torture porn I also find that term very dismissive, and I'm amazed when people apply it. You know, people say Hostel is torture porn. It's like, have you seen Hostel? Do you know what you're talking about?
Yeah.
And so now we're that wave seems to have passed. And maybe I'm wrong about this. I feel sort of like this whole remake wave has sort of passed. I know there's a ton still in development. I'm hoping a lot of them just die and don't see the light of day. But I feel like that's a little bit past. So now I feel like horror films are still very much alive and vibrant, but there's no sort of unifying concept to them. There's no one thing that everybody's doing, which is great. That's where we want to be. But I worry that now studios, you know, don't know how to market stuff, don't want to take a chance on stuff. And thank God for VOD and some of those smaller labels that you had mentioned earlier who had movies at your festival, because yeah, they can take chances on smaller movies. And I'm able to see ABCs of Death, you know, because they'll put it on video on demand and I can watch it in my house. That's how I was able to see Hatchet 3. And that was the first time I was able to see a Hatchet movie before it came out on DVD or Blu-ray. So thank God for that stuff. So I think things are changing for the better, but I just kind of want to get your take on where you feel like the genre is at right now.
Well, I mean, if I sort of put on my business hat for a second,
please do.
And I'm actually putting on a hat. No, I'm
okay, good.
Yeah. But it's an interesting time, because what I've sort of noticed is, one, you know, the business itself is changing just because of technology and sort of the way it is. And the reality is that, you know, it's sad to say this, but DVD and Blu-rays, especially overseas, are kind of going by the wayside.
I know. I'm so upset. I love physical media.
I do too. And it really makes me sad. Like I was having this conversation with somebody, like, that people, you know, this generation of kids, they're not going to understand how cool it is to have tangible stuff.
Right.
Like they don't understand, like, sort of that tangibility factor. And I think that, you know, I'm glad I grew up when I did, because we have that, like, you know, how many generations have gone through, like, you know, cassettes to records to CDs, and then you watch, like, you know, VHS and beta to DVD to Blu-ray. I mean, nobody's ever going to have that again. So it's a unique perspective. And so that kind of bums me out that that's sort of what's happening on the business sense. And then, you know, for me, in terms of where the genre is itself, I mean, one, I love the fact that we're getting back to R-rated horror, for better or for worse.
Mm-hmm.
I like that we're seeing more of those show up in theaters, and in not the usual times. It's not just October now.
Right.
You know, the Purge did very well a few months ago. You know, The Conjuring is doing all sorts of great stuff in the summer, you know, which again takes me back to being a kid and going and seeing horror movies in the summer.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, generally now it's just tentpole movies and safe stuff. You don't get a lot of horror in the summer.
Yeah.
Or if you do, it's at the, you know, it's in the beginning of August when nobody wants to put on anything. And, you know, people are just trying to make stuff disappear. So, you know, I love the fact that R-rated horror is coming back. You know, I mean, I may not love all of the movies that have come out, you know, that have been R-rated. But I think for me, it's just, you know, anything is good for the genre.
You know, and
it gives more, you know, it gives guys like Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett a chance to have a movie like You're Next in theaters nationwide. You know, these aren't guys who are used to nationwide releases. So for me, you know, what I love about that is that it's also kind of opening up doors for independent horror more. And I think, you know, and you're going to see it a little bit more, you know, VOD is doing really well for the independent side. Like it's kicking all sorts of ass, but it's interesting to me because certain movies, they're sort of either doing like the road tour approach, which is incredible to watch with like movies like John Dies at the End. I mean, that movie did really, really well, you know, through its limited engagements. But there's also, you know, I just totally lost my train of thought there. But, you know, I just love the fact that, you know, finally people are actually starting to talk about independent movies. Like, I'll tell you, one of my favorite movies this year, and it might actually end up being my number one movie for the year, was Sightseers.
Oh, really?
Yes. Have you seen it?
I have.
The ending for me, like, seriously made that movie, like, my jaw was on the floor. And we shouldn't say it, because it's for me, it just, I wasn't even a huge Ben Wheatley fan going into it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, his other stuff I was okay with. I didn't love it. But for me, like, there was just something about that relationship in watching it and just how much they take something so mundane.
Mm-hmm.
And everything about that movie is so mundane that ends up being so exaggerated. And I don't know if it's just because sometimes I feel like my mundane life gets exaggerated. I don't know. Or that I go, you know, on vacation in an RV and go off and kill people. I don't know. But, you know, I love that movie. Like, for me, and that's the thing, like, 5 years ago, that movie would have come and gone, and maybe, you know, 1/5 of the people who talked about it now, maybe they would have talked about it. And right. To see people finally, like, embracing independent film, like, you know, it's finally kind of coming into its own. And for me, that's where all the really exciting stuff is happening.
Yeah. I like, too, it seems like, and I know this was certainly the case back, especially in the 80s, where you had sort of this stable of horror auteurs, you know, the guys that you know were the horror guys, your John Carpenters and your Toby Hoopers and Wes Craven and guys who, you know, made specifically horror movies. And I feel like there is finally a new generation of people. It's not just a smattering of like one or two, but there's a whole group of guys, and you can see them, you know, movies like VHS or ABCs of Death are kind of cool because they get a bunch of them together. So you can get just a sample of, well, here's a little bit of Adam Wingard. Here's a little bit of Ty West. Here's a little bit of Ben Wheatley. And you know, wow, that little piece was cool enough that I want to go and seek out the rest of that guy's movies. I'm very intrigued by Ben Wheatley's next movie. I need to see every movie at least twice, I feel like, because the first time, especially with something like Sightseers, which was a little bit hard to get a handle on almost, because it does kind of shift as it, you know, it's sort of this changing thing as it moves along. And so every time I feel like I'm caught up, it starts to shift away from me again. So I do want to see it again. Kill List is another movie like that, where I'm positive I need to see Kill List a second time to really give it its due. But A Field in England, I'm super interested in.
Yeah, I think, and again, it's really great because I think that's starting on the festival circuit.
Mm-hmm.
I think either it was at, I think it's at Fantasia or it was somewhere else. But yeah, that's, again, it's really great to see people talking about him. And what's interesting to me is that I've seen articles sort of popping up and with people comparing Ben to like Christopher Nolan. Which, to me, I mean, I would have never made that comparison, but then I'm like, you know, I'm kind of thinking of it within the context, and I was like, wow, I mean, again, this is a guy who, you know, he's not, you know, his last name isn't Craven or Carpenter
right. Or
Hooper. I mean, you know, he's a guy from England who's always made, you know, independent projects, and like, to have somebody like, compare you to somebody like Christopher Nolan, I mean, that's like, that's not a comparison you see every day, which right. Is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things I like about sort of where we are at in horror is it feels like maybe we've stopped processing, and I don't know if it was just processing sort of 9/11 or the Iraq War or whatever, but there was a while there, and again, because so much of it was remaking stuff from the 70s, there was this big push to make horror movies that felt like the stuff that was coming out in the 70s, sort of that post-Vietnam. And so it was all, you know, kind of tough to get through. And I like a lot of those movies. I actually like the remake of Hills Have Eyes and, you know, I love Devil's Rejects. But those movies are a little bit tough. And some of the horror movies now, it feels like, and it definitely sounds like this is the case with Your Next. Again, I haven't seen it yet. But that they're sliding a little bit more into sort of the 80s vibe, where the thing I loved about the 80s was that horror movies were fun.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a little bit of a shift that way. Even The Conjuring, which you had talked about, you know, you're so happy that there's R-rated horror now. And I can't even wrap my head around the hypocrisy that movie is rated R, but whatever.
I know, right?
But it does seem like here's a horror movie that wants to be fun and that actually seems to like its characters and sort of want the best for them and is just interested in scaring us in a fun way and not reminding us that life is horrible and we're all going to die someday. So I kind of like that trend in horror movies now.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's interesting to me also another thing that I've sort of noticed, and again, it didn't do necessarily the business that they wanted it to do, but I, you know, I think Cabin in the Woods had far more influence than people realize, because we've had such an influx over like the last year of horror comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think people are realizing that it's okay to sort of laugh with the genre,
yeah,
without laughing at the genre. At,
yeah,
the genre.
Yeah.
To me, something like Sharknado is laughing at the genre. But I won't even get started on Sharknado because it still angers me to no end. It seriously makes my skin crawl thinking about how people are responding to that movie.
I can't wrap my head around that people don't see right through the cynicism of that. Like, it doesn't make you hip to think Sharknado is funny. Like, the movie is two steps ahead of you, and it knows that that's the audience. It's like hipster, ironic bullshit. I can't fathom a world in which people don't get what Sharknado really is.
Yeah. And that's the thing for me. Like, you know, I grew up watching like Corman's movies and stuff like that. And I just remember like the first time I saw like Piranha and stuff like that, like, and Death Race. And like, you know, the thing that, you know, people are like, oh, you know, he was the king of the B movie and stuff. But the thing is, Corman made those movies with love.
Right.
And the movies that come out now, you know, they're not made with love. They're basically laughing at the people who love those movies.
Right.
And they're trying to make it digestible for people who don't. And to me, it's kind of a really, I don't know, I want to say dangerous, but that makes it into more than it is. But I think it's just a really crappy line to be walking.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, I get nothing out of going to see a movie so that I can feel superior to it for 2 hours.
Not at all. I mean, that's the thing. You know, for me, good stories are ones that you can connect to, not ones that you feel like you're better than, or
right,
one, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't want to go 2 hours to something and have people tell me I'm stupid. You know what I mean?
Through
some stupid shark movie. Like,
right,
you know, it's not entertainment to me, but you know, it's each their own, you know, I guess. So
what did you think of, cause you brought up Cabin in the Woods. What did you think of the Evil Dead remake from earlier this year? And I bring it up because I'll say I was not crazy about it, and I'm a big fan of the original, and wasn't crazy about this new one, not just because it's not the original movie, but I did, to some extent, I do find it, I think it's a little harder now to sit through a Cabin in the Woods movie after seeing Cabin in the Woods.
You know, it's funny. My favorite quote now is, I heard somebody say this at like a convention or something, but they were like, now that we live in a post Cabin in the Woods world. And I was like, oh my God, it's like the moment in horror, which again is kind of cool. I wish it would have translated into more money for Lionsgate, but you know, I mean, it's still sort of funny that everyone's like, we live in a post Cabin in the Woods world.
Yeah.
I'll fully say that I wouldn't say I'm biased, but I was really, really fortunate last year to get to go on a set visit for it. To New Zealand.
And oh, wow.
Yeah, it was insane. I've never been off the continent before, and that was a hell of a way to have to do that. So, but what, you know, and the thing is, I went into it, you know, I mean, I come from sort of two worlds on remakes, you know. Some of my favorite movies are remakes. You know, I mean, The Fly,
yeah.
The Thing,
yeah.
You know, I, frankly, I freaking love the Dawn of the Dead remake. There's,
yeah,
so much humor to that movie that,
yeah,
I just... Everything about that movie works for me, especially as a modern horror movie. And, you know, and again, that shows what good remakes can be. You know, it's people who find ways to sort of lovingly, you know, pay homage to those movies and respect them,
right,
you know.
Right.
And, you know, but at the same time, you know, I have to sit through, you know, a lot of really bad remakes. And, you know, so when I heard they were doing Evil Dead, I mean, to be honest, I was the first person who was like ready to flip a table and start lighting stuff on fire. Like, I was pissed. I was like, why would you do that? I mean, to me, it was just, I saw it immediately as like a cash grab. I will totally fully admit that. And then, you know, we get there and, you know, you talk to them and, you know, it was basically Rob Tapper and Sam Raimi, you know, basically financing it themselves, and then they sold it to Film District.
Yeah.
You know, they were still keeping it independent. That's why they did it in New Zealand, because, you know, they've got the production studio there. And what I loved about Fede's at least vision for it. And I can appreciate why people don't love it. I would never tell anybody like, oh, you don't like that movie. You're an idiot. I understand why people don't like it, you know? And for me, it was exactly what I was hoping for after talking to him. And I think maybe because I had that context, I knew what I was in for. So that's kind of like my full disclosure that I kind of went into it knowing somewhat what to expect from the tone in sort of his approach.
Sure.
But I'll tell you that this dude was a fan. Like, you know, he was living the dream on this movie. Like, they basically called him up because of he did this really awesome robot short, and I'm totally blanking on the name, but you should find it on YouTube. It's really incredible for what he did for like no money. Mm-hmm. And so basically they took a meeting with him just based on the short film. And then they were like, you know, and he wasn't even thinking that they were doing an Evil Dead remake. And they were like, so how'd you feel about doing Evil Dead? I mean, you know, that would be like, well, they've already done it, but that would be like if somebody came to me and be like, hey, you want to do the Fright Night remake? Like, holy shit, how do you turn that down? Someone's going to do it. I mean, right. We live in the age where someone's going to remake it.
Right.
So, you know, if you're coming at it from a fan perspective, the best you can do is respect the material that you have from the previous stuff and try to do something different. And, you know, there are things about that movie, and I'll say, like, revisiting it now at home, not being within the context of, like, an audience and stuff, it's not nearly as enjoyable without, like, a theater full of people.
Sure.
You know, it's very grisly. But for me, what I really loved about that movie, I wasn't even a really huge fan of some of the characters or anything like that, but the two things I appreciate about the movie was Lou Taylor Pucci, mm-hmm. Because his character just takes a beating, and it's just like
I actually wanted it to go farther, and I swear I'm not a sadist, but it almost gets to the point where it's hilarious how far it's going, and then they kind of cut it short right at that moment. Like, it needed to tip over the edge just a little bit more for me.
Gotcha.
But I agree with you. I mean, that was one of the enjoyable things about the movie. What was the other thing?
Yeah. And for me, it was that the fact that they went practical. The only thing that they had to do like 3 digital shots of fire. And the thing is, they really burned somebody for that first scene.
Yeah.
You know, they just had to add some fire to it. I mean, clearly they're not going to torch the entire cabin down or anything like that. You know, you can only go so far. But I loved the fact that, you know, there was that mandate from the start. We are not doing CGI blood. And again, for a movie, you know, that was initially independently financed, it would have been so easy and a lot cheaper for them to go that route, but
right.
they didn't. I mean,
right.
they really hacked arms off in that movie, and those kids went through hell. And again, it's one of those things, knowing that going into it, again, it's probably why I enjoyed it so much. But, you know, like I said, it does play better with an audience. And I watched it again at home and I liked it still, but it's a harder watch when you're not sort of chuckling along at certain scenes and getting that sort of levity when you need it.
Right. Which, I mean, you know, I'm sure that's true of a lot of horror movies. It's always a more fun experience with an audience. I saw like Paranormal Activity, not 4, because I did not like 4 at all.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
They didn't even try to make anything happen in that movie. But the third one I actually thought was really good. And I saw it opening weekend with an audience, and it was a ton of fun because the audience was so just freaked out of their minds, and they're screaming and jumping up and down. And admittedly, I haven't felt the urge to revisit it ever because I know it can't be as fun as it was that time. And me sitting by myself watching it, it might still be a fine movie, but it's not – the sense of fun is not going to be there.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm so glad you liked 3 because for me, it felt totally like a modern Poltergeist.
Yeah.
I love the fact, like, pot-smoking parents, you know. I loved 3. I thought 3 was a hell of a lot of fun. And, yeah, I was super disappointed in 4.
Yikes.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's the thing. Again, it sort of comes into those expectations. Like, I think after 3, I mean, I was just, especially with the ending of 3, I was so ready to be in that moment at the
right.
beginning of 4,
right.
and then you're not at all. And
right.
I was like, wait, what?
Is that is Paranormal Activity the only like ongoing franchise we have now in terms of theatrical releases? I know, you know. I mean, now that Saw is over,
it is.
Wow.
I believe
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, and that again, that's like it. Kind of sucks. It kind of shows. I don't know if it's just that audiences are changing because it's new generations of viewers and stuff, but. You know, it's weird. Like, yeah, in the 80s, I mean, there was at least 4 to 5 franchises going at any one given time.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, that's really weird. I think it is the only one.
Yeah, which, I mean, I would almost say that's good because it means, hey, they're doing more original stuff. But, you know, in a lot of ways, they're still just, again, I like you, some of my favorite horror movies of all time, and you named them, are remakes. And the only one I think I would add to that list is Chuck Russell's remake of The Blob, which I love so much. So I'm not instinctually opposed to the idea of a remake, but my heart does sink a little bit every time they say, well, we're remaking this, because I don't think that there's, you know, when David Cronenberg remakes The Fly, it's because he has something that he wants to say with that story. When somebody tells me, hey, we're remaking Poltergeist, I just kind of think it's because they hope people will recognize the name Poltergeist. And even with Evil Dead, I mean, I understand that that was brought on by the original makers, but at the same time, it's like, why do we need to make a horror movie that takes place in a cabin and kids get hacked up and there's blood or whatever, but do we need to call it Evil Dead? And that's more of a marketing thing that I just feel like they're relying too heavily on name recognition and that some of the creativity stops there. And that doesn't apply to Evil Dead, but I just think of like the Nightmare on Elm Street remake or a lot of the sort of the emptier horror movie remakes seem to start and end with the title.
Yeah. And it's true. I mean, you know, that's the thing. And that's what sucks. It's the unfortunate business side of it is that unfortunately it's familiarity sells.
Right.
But my only hope for Poltergeist, and maybe in the zeitgeist of horror, somehow one of those writers is listening, but my only hope is that they can find some way to sort of parallel this story with the housing crash of 2008. Because really, I mean, if you think about the context of what they put, because back in the 80s, people, like all these new subdivisions were coming in all over the country. I mean, that was something happening in California, in Illinois, everywhere in the country. So it was a really good sort of, you know, like sort of allegory to what was happening with these new developments and how they were sort of like taking over these areas that maybe they shouldn't have been. And right. So for me, the only thing that really is relevant in this, like sort of these days is like the housing crash. And I think that could be a really interesting sort of something to play on. So I don't know, maybe, you know, fingers crossed that maybe that would be something they'd consider if they're listening.
Yeah, no, that would be great because, like I said, that would be somebody trying to figure out, okay, what reason should this have for existing, you know, aside from just, well, we can update the special effects or whatever. I mean,
right.
You look at that Nightmare on Elm Street thing, and I'm certainly not the first person to point this out, but, you know, that Freddy coming through the wall in that Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Oh, man.
Just, it flies in the face of everything that I understand to be true. I don't understand how using latex in 1984, that effect is so much better than, I'm sure, the very expensive digital effect that they did in the remake. And who's looking at that and saying, this better.
Is good.
Right. If you're going to recreate an iconic shot, shouldn't you make sure it's as good or better and not just a terrible substitute? I cannot wrap my head. And you know, that movie gets picked on a lot. And I think, you know, mostly rightfully so. I know Jackie Earle Haley gave it his all. And there's a kernel of an idea that they try to do in that movie. But it's such a good example of just sort of this hollow reproduction of something that is great, you know?
Yeah. Well, I will say in full disclosure, and it's one of these things that sort of has hung over my head for years, but I actually gave that movie a semi-positive review. And I stand by that because I actually really liked it the first time I saw it. There was a lot that I really appreciated. I thought like the opening title, like really sort of set it for me. You know, I thought again, it was, they were taking some risks, which I thought was interesting. I mean, there were certain things I wasn't expecting. You know, but, you know, it's one of those movies you go back and you watch now and you're like, oh my God, what the hell was I thinking? And you have no idea the amount of shit that I got and I still get for that review. And how many years ago is that? But the thing is, I should have known, I should have known basically from the set visit that I did, which was really cool because I actually got to come back from LA to Chicago for it.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun. It was my first set visit and I got to go back home and get drunk. So it was cool. Platinum Dunes. It was pretty neat. But yeah, so it was one of those, like, I should have known because it was total chaos when we went there. Everything that we saw on our set visit wasn't even in the movie. And we were watching the initial ending. So the movie that was in theaters wasn't even the ending that we saw.
Really?
Because it was, yeah, I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this, but I think it's in the deleted scene. So hopefully I don't get sued or anything. And if I do, I'm sorry, Platinum Dunes. I'm just trying to prove a case that you had a really good ending.
Stop remaking movies, Platinum Dunes.
Yes. But they had, it was this really cool thing where it was like she was sleeping and Kyle Gallner was there sleeping. And all of a sudden he unzipped himself, which I thought it was a really cool effect that Sam Baer had done in a music video. And I forget which one it was, but it looked really fun. Like I was like, oh, sweet. We're going to like unzip ahead. Like, you know, it looked really fun. And I thought, okay, that's an interesting twist. And then it was not that at all.
Yeah.
Like, and then they threw the diner thing in there at the beginning and it was just, and I know, and I was fortunate enough through one of my day jobs that I had a few years ago that I got to briefly know Thomas Decker for a little bit. And I heard some of the stories and I just felt bad for what those kids went through to make that movie because they really went through hell. And I should have known from our set visit how Sam Baer was reacting to us. I mean, we had 2 minutes with him and he basically said he hated the original Nightmare on Elm Street and all the movies and thought it was time somebody made a scary Nightmare on Elm Street, and I was like, okay, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, how does that guy get the job? See, I don't understand why somebody in charge would hire the guy who says, I hate the original. Because that should be a requirement,
honestly,
to get the job.
If you want me to sort of be real about it, please. It's because, and I say this lovingly because some of the directors that they've used have actually worked out really well. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, you know, Platinum Dunes, they were really focused on bringing in music video directors and, you know, sort of developing into filmmakers, mm-hmm. which, you know, I'm not opposed to that at all. I think, you know, some of them have made really incredible transitions, but, you know, unfortunately, as their formula wore on, you know, I know Sam was approached for other movies and he turned them down. He didn't want to do them. And I sort of think he was kind of the last man left for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sort of ended up just doing it because he couldn't get anything else.
Yeah.
You know,
do any of those Platinum Dunes? I mean, are you a fan of any? And again, I'm not asking you to, because obviously you know a lot of the people who work on these movies, so I don't want you to necessarily shit on any of them. But to me, that whole wave of Platinum Dunes, because I just remembered that they remade the Amityville Horror and like just
– I'm one of the few people who actually like the Amityville Horror remake. Really? Just because it was – well, again, I haven't watched it in a while, so I probably should go back. But it was ballsy, and I'd never seen Ryan Reynolds like that intense. It was like his abs were angry in that movie. Like, seriously, like that movie, he was really intense in it. And again, it's also the reason like I became a really big fan of his. Like, I loved what he did in Buried, and it was because of Amityville Horror. So, yeah. You know, I didn't hate that movie. Again, I should probably go back and watch it. I probably wouldn't like it as much, but you know, I enjoy the original Amityville Horror. I don't love it as much as other people do. It's a good movie. It's not great to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, it's not one of those that kind of is near and dear to me. So I wasn't really opposed to it. And, you know, so I think Platinum Dunes was kind of hit or miss. So, you know, they kind of, I like the Texas remake. Like, I thought Texas Chainsaw was really good.
That seems to be the one that's sort of held up as people saying, you know, this is the one that works. And I'll admit, I'm not the world's biggest fan of that movie. I think it does a lot of things well. Part of my problem is just that the aesthetic is so at odds with, and again, at least it's trying to maybe distinguish itself, but you know, part of what's so great about the original movie is just that it feels like you're watching
a documentary,
snuff movie. Yeah. And now you have this remake that's shot like a music video and it's beautiful and it's, you know, filming these gorgeous WB actors and everyone, it has just the right thin layer of sweat. And to me that just felt off with the material. You know what I mean? Not even like, oh, you have to do Texas Chainsaw this way, because I don't believe that. But just in terms of the story that they were telling, I felt like the aesthetic was at odds. But I know that movie has a ton of fans, I know.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it's one of, I haven't watched probably like about 5 years, but what I loved about that movie, and for me, my favorite shot was the bullet hole, because I was like, oh my God. Like, yeah. Again, it wasn't, you know, because again, I think maybe Saw opened those doors a little bit, but we weren't seeing shots like that.
Right.
On a big screen. Like that just, that was stuff you were seeing, you know, on movies that were not getting, you know, any kind of a theatrical release. So right. I like that it had that ballsiness to it. And I think, you know, for me, I really like, you know, Jessica Biel. Like, I don't know. For some reason, I really – there's something I really enjoy about her, whether, you know, she's in something terrible like the Total Recall remake. I mean, she's trying, yeah. You know. And I think one of these days she's going to find that movie. And, you know, I liked her in the Texas Chainsaw movie. I thought she really showed that she could kick some ass. And, I, you know what? And honestly – I'm also an apologist for Blade Trinity. But I like her in that. Also,
which also
Ryan
had
Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds and his angry abs. So I see.
I know. I see. Oh, he did have angry abs in that.
That
totally.
Was, I think, his first movie where it was like, holy shit, Ryan Reynolds is cut.
Yeah. And again, it goes into the theory of if you put wrestling in anything, like, I'm going to be there. And it had Triple H. So
that movie's I love hearing the. A lot of the behind-the-scenes stories. Patton Oswalt talks a lot about he did the movie just to have crazy Wesley Snipes stories and apparently walked away with a bunch of them. So you kind of get a sense of it even listening to the director's commentary, because you kind of get a sense that David Goyer and Wesley Snipes were not getting along real well.
No, I don't think so.
And by the way, that's what I meant to bring this up a long time ago when we were talking about the disappearance of physical media. You know, this idea of I like to have a collection on my shelf, and, you know, that's sort of this weird vague concept that maybe not everybody can understand. But what is going to go away with the disappearance of physical media is bonus features, is deleted scenes, is director's commentaries. And that stuff is so great and can make you appreciate a movie so much more. I've learned so much just in the years, like collecting Laserdiscs to Blu-rays by watching supplemental material on movies, and that's all going to go away when streaming is the only option.
I know, totally. And I'll say that kind of bums me out, because I've been lucky enough to get to do some sort of featurettes for a few smaller releases.
Oh, like
and,
what?
I got to
plug
do
yourself
special,
here.
I got to do special features on this movie called The Devil's Carnival.
Okay.
By Darren Lynn Bousman, who did Saw 2, 3, and 4.
Sure.
So we were really lucky to get to do those, and we just did some special features for this new, I think they're going to do it on the website, called Tom Holland's Twisted Tales.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we got to do some fun stuff for that. But yeah, so I mean, for me, I love that stuff, because being somebody, you know, being a journalist, like, it's just sort of an extension of what I do and what I love. Mm-hmm. So I love watching that stuff. Like, I think I might have spent an entire night just going through like the bonus features just on like Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just for me, I love that stuff. And I'm such a nerd for those stories. Like my day job, I'm really lucky. I work for a distribution company, and my boss, he used to work like at all these distribution companies in the 80s. And he was at AFCO like in 81 when they were putting out like The Fog and The Howling and Phantasm and all those movies like around that era. And like, I'm so fascinated by that stuff. Like, I think that's so cool. And I just feel like, you know, people that are, you know, 20 years younger than us, God, that makes me feel old, but you know, they're not going to be able to appreciate stuff like the way that we do.
Right.
Like the history and the culture to it.
Right. Yeah. It bums me out. I don't know.
It does. I weep for this generation.
Do you have, I know offhand, and you can name it now. I mean, I already know what your favorite horror movie of all time is, so you can talk about that, but what are the horror movies that you go back to the most?
Well, I'm a total Fright Night nerd, and I'm really, really fortunate because I get to sort of get to call Tom Holland a friend.
Nice.
Which, you know, I have this amazing photo saved on my phone, and it's from a report I did in second grade. You didn't go to Bird, right?
No. Salt Creek. Salt Creek all the way.
Woo! No, sorry. Bird was better. We had like a penguin as our mascot.
You had the sledding hill. I'll give you that.
Oh, we totally did.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I remember my second grade, I had Mrs. Renee, and she was the worst teacher I've ever had. And she's probably not alive anymore, so she won't hear this. But she really...
a zombie.
Yeah, but she is just the worst. She was like the worst teacher. And so we had to do these reports at the end of the year. Like, you know, you drew pictures and stuff. And like one of the pages was like favorite book, favorite TV show, favorite movie. And my favorite book at the time was Helen Keller, which I thought was really funny. I was apparently really well versed in my literary, you know, prowess in second grade. And then my favorite TV show was Cosby Show, you know, gotta love Huxtables. But my movie was Fright Night. And I have this drawing that I did. And again, I was always getting in trouble with her because I liked horror stuff and was always drawing stuff. And like, so she would tell my mom that I was like disturbed, which maybe I was, I don't know. But you know, so, but for me, like just, I was packing up some old stuff and I found that drawing and I was like, holy crap. Like, you know, so Fright Night for me is huge. Like that's, I actually probably fall asleep to that movie every night unless I'm traveling. And then my other go-to movie is Terror in the Isles.
Really?
It is, because it was like my encyclopedia growing up.
Sure.
You know, it was the movie, like I would go to the video store and I would look at the cover and I would try to find the movies that they talked about.
You know, when they put that out with the Halloween 2 Blu-ray, it was the first time I'd seen it in a long time because it hadn't been available on DVD previously, and I watched it growing up, and I would always have to leave the room during the American Werewolf transformation, because even though that's like one of the best special effects sequences ever and the greatest werewolf transformation of all time, I still can't watch it to this day.
Wow.
I don't like it because of how much it hurts, and I know that was the idea, you know, that's what Landis was really after, but I don't like that, so it makes me uncomfortable, so I turn it off. But when I rewatched Terror in the Isles, I was amazed at how many clips from that movie aren't really from horror movies. Like they only had a certain number of stuff they had access to. And so they try and work a lot of stuff in that I'm like, I don't know if I count that as horror, but okay.
A lot of thrillers.
Yeah.
Yeah. My two things about that is, one, my dream project is I would either want to do either a new Terror in the Isles,
yeah,
or a sequel. Like if anybody ever like said that they were doing that, I would beg. I mean, I would just, I don't even know how far I would go, but I would go there.
I would say like Kickstarter that shit, but I feel like the rights issues would make it so prohibitively expensive.
I would have to do a lot of fast talking to try to afford that. But, and the other thing is when you talk about American Werewolf in London, that was actually the first horror movie I ever saw at age 3.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know, being brought up by a single mom is kind of awesome, I think. But and it's weird because I don't remember much about like movies and stuff from back then. But for me, what I actually remember from seeing that movie was the movie theater scene where he's talking to Jack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that always stuck with me as a kid. And so I love American Werewolf. And the funny thing was I told Landis that story and he was like, your mom is a sick fuck. And I was like, I didn't really see it that way. I mean, you know, I kind of feel like maybe that's why I'm here, but you know, I'll pass along your regards.
I do love that movie so much, but I've gotten better with that transformation scene, but I've always had a hard time with it. I don't know. So Terror in the Isles and Fright Night, those are the two that you watch the most.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's not horror related, I mean, my other big one, again, is Point Break, which is a movie that, seriously, there is never not a good time to watch Point Break.
No, that's one of the best movies ever made.
It really is. And speaking of remakes, the fact that they're remaking it now, just, I would rather have a Speed 2 type sequel than a remake.
Yeah. Well, first of all, they already did remake it, and it was called The Fast and Furious.
That's true.
But also, you know, again, there's such an alchemy to that movie, and so much of it has to do with Catherine Bigelow, and so much of it has to do with Keanu Reeves being who he was at that time. Not just Keanu Reeves as an actor, but specifically Keanu Reeves in 1991 and Patrick Swayze. And so you're going to have something, again, that either doesn't get what works about the original or something that kind of goofs on it, because a lot of people, you know, write that movie off as being silly or dumb, but those people are a-holes.
Yeah, totally. And that's the thing, like everyone, you know, there's Point Break Live here. And I love that. I love that there's sort of that fun kind of version of it out there. But for me, I mean, that movie just works on so many levels that I still think people are kind of still discovering.
Yeah.
Like, I think Catherine, you know, I almost wish that movie existed now because I think people would appreciate it more now than they did in 91. Because 91, it was still like sort of in the vein of just the over-the-top action movies.
Right.
It wasn't
right.
really thoughtful movies. And, you know, for me, like seeing, you know, kind of the character of Johnny Utah, and it very much paralleled Keanu at that point in his career.
Yeah.
Like, he was very much transitioning, you know, if I get deep here from out, much like Johnny Utah was transitioning.
Yeah.
So, you know, and dude, Patrick Swayze seriously was like the best thing that ever happened to 80s movies. Like, he's the only actor that I seriously, every time I think about the fact that he's no longer with us, I get really sad.
So who are some of your current favorite horror filmmakers? Like who are some people that we should be watching?
Huh. Well, God, that's so hard. Like I'm really curious to see what Your Next does for Wingard and Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, I like guys like Patrick and Marcus. I'm probably in the minority, but I loved Piranha 3DD.
Really?
And I did.
Really?
Again, but here's the thing, though. I know John Gulager.
Yeah.
I know his just ridiculous silliness.
Yeah.
Like, the way that he directed that movie was sort of that, like, childish glee. Like, he has that, really. Like, he is seriously a kid living in a candy store. Anytime he's in anything that's horror, sort of centric, he is just, you know, he couldn't be any happier. And, you know, and I think I kind of going into that, knowing him and knowing that, like, I was ready for that kind of a movie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is it a masterpiece? But, you know, but for me, it was a fun, silly movie. And I liked where Patrick and Marcus took the story. You know, I thought some of the stuff that they did with the Hoff was really fun. And I know some of the stuff that they wanted to do that had to get cut. You know, and again, that was a movie that also really got butchered because of the budget.
You could tell, watch it. I mean, that's definitely a movie where you watch it and you can tell that
the budget's sort of going downwards as the movie progresses.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, but you know, I think if I'm not mistaken, correct, you know, we have Ving Rhames with machine gun light or something like that. Like, I mean, that's just, you know, how cool, you know, you don't get that very often. So,
well, except we had just seen it a couple of years earlier with Rose McGowan. So,
well, it had been because Grindhouse was what, 2005?
2007.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough.
I mean, it's still a couple years, but it's just, had it been the first machine gun leg I'd ever seen, I would be like, wow, super cool. But if I have to choose, I'm going to go Rose McGowan over Ving Rhames.
Dude, Rose McGowan's awesome. I love her. So,
yeah.
You know, I won't argue that. You know, I'm really curious to see where Adam Green goes now, you know, I'm really enjoying the fact that he's sort of stepping out in the Holliston world, but now that he's kind of also doing some directing again, like,
yeah.
I'm really curious to see where we're going to go sort of now that the Hatchet trilogy's, you know, wrapped up in certain ways. And you know what I mean? Like, I'm curious to see, because I loved Frozen and I thought that was such a powerful movie. And
yeah.
I'm really curious to kind of see him get back to a different story again.
Right.
Like, I think, especially now being a filmmaker who's been through so much over the last 10 years of his career, like, you know, I'm really curious to see what he, I think, Digging Up the Marrow is the one he's working on now.
And I've so been trying to even make sense of what that is. it sounds like it's a documentary, but then it's not. I'm fascinated by the hints that he drops about what that movie is. And it sounds like maybe he's not even sure. It sounds like something that's evolving as he's doing it.
No, and I think, you know, and again, I think that's sort of what's interesting about film now is that, you know, you have filmmakers that can kind of do that. And again, it's not like it's costing him, like, you know, $5 million on a studio or anything like that. He can just go, you know, he's got the resources to go and do it.
Right.
And that's cool. Like, I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I've really been wanting to watch Twixt. Have you seen it?
I have not seen Twixt. And every time I come close to seeing Twixt, someone talks me out of it.
I know. And that's the thing. Like, I know it's a movie that I'm probably not going to like.
Yeah.
But there's parts that's like, I can't live life and not watch it once.
Yeah. I am super bummed that we're never going to see it. in that crazy roadshow version that he had at Comic-Con a couple of years ago, where he's editing it on the fly and he's doing sound effects and all that. Even if I didn't like the movie, just that experience would have been worth the whole thing. So yes, without it sort of removed from all that, I'm worried about how the movie will do on its own.
Yeah, I will say I was really, really lucky that year, and I actually got to interview those guys for Twixt, and I got to breathe the same air as Francis Ford Coppola, and I almost died. Like, it was, I don't think I actually said 5 full words. Like, I just probably made some noises and put the microphone in his face, and he was awesome enough to realize kind of what I was saying and respond really well. Yeah. So, but for me, I totally geeked out because of Dan Deacon. Like, I thought that was like, I love his music. So I was really excited by sort of this weird premise that somebody like Dan Deacon and Francis Ford Coppola, of all people, would be like, yeah, we should totally do a movie together.
Right.
Like, that was a conversation that actually happened. And that, to me, that fascinates me. How did that happen?
Right. I like the idea too of Francis Ford Coppola doing horror. I mean, I know he's done it before, but it's just, it's kind of cool when somebody at his level sort of decides to do a genre movie, you know, and I'm always interested in what that looks like. Again, even if it's a total train wreck, and a lot of what I've heard is that it is, I have to see it as a curiosity.
Yeah. And I think almost anybody who maybe just appreciates movies for what they are, you know what I mean? I think that that's the people who should watch this. Like, if this isn't for the 18-year-olds bored on a Friday night.
Right.
And I'm good with that. You know what I mean? Thank God he didn't make a horror movie like that. Like, right, that would have been, you know, that's not what I want to see. Like, for better or for worse, he's taking a chance. And, you know, I'm good with that. So, yeah, I think that's also something that's kind of interesting. I think there's sort of more of an openness now, maybe. Mm-hmm. In stories that, you know, again, we weren't really seeing 5 years ago. Everything 5 years ago was a sequel or a remake.
Right.
So it's cool to me that, like, original stories, better for better or for worse, are getting out there. So
do you have a favorite? Okay, you mentioned Sightseers. You mentioned Your Next. Of the last, let's open it up even to the last couple of years. What are some of your favorite horror movies that have come out just in the last couple of years?
Oh my goodness. You know, for me, I sort of define everything from The Descent. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. I mean, that I would argue that that's, whoa, my goodness. There's a monster.
Oh my, oh my God. Sorry. That is, I have a Chihuahua, that we sort of cheetah. Oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
No,
yes,
it's totally fine.
I inherited a Chihuahua, so I have a Chihuahua now.
I think The Descent is the probably the best horror film of the 2000s.
It's sort of interesting because I know you mentioned you didn't like Devil's Rejects, but
no, I love Devil's Rejects. I love it.
Oh, you do? Okay, yeah. For me, it was my two movies that for like that generation. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Wow, okay. This is so recording. but for me, like, the two movies that really were just so incredibly powerful were The Devil's Rejects and The Descent.
Yeah.
Like, that's the bar for me. Like, you have to get really close to that bar, you know, and to be considered, like, what I call, like, sort of, you know, those moments in horror. And, you know, it's really hard. You know, every year I kind of struggle with, like, what's my best stuff and, you know, what my favorite movies are. And, you know, my tastes, I'm weird. Like, I love things for weird reasons. Mm. Like, for me, I grew up watching horror comedies, so I always gravitate towards horror comedies. So, like, for me, I go back and I still watch Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just, you know, and also because my mom's family's from West Virginia. So I get that movie on a lot of different levels because there is a lot of truth to that movie in a lot of ways. So I think, you know, that movie I really appreciated, like, you know, I wish it had done better. Also, Attack the Block.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I cannot wait. Like, that's one movie, like, I don't know how a sequel would ever work, but God, I just want to see those creatures again on the big screen because they, I mean, seriously, the way that they did it, it still just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, trying to think of other stuff that, you know, Let the Right One In. I mean, that's another movie that I can go back and watch and just, it haunts me. Like, it sticks with me. And I actually liked Let Me In. I thought Reeves did a pretty decent job with it. And I thought the two kids, you know, Chloe and Cody were really, really good in it. But Let the Right One In for me just, you know, and again, I think it was also in the context that I saw it, because when I was working for the smaller site, I was always flying myself out to LA every October for a film festival out here called Scream Fest.
Yes.
And I was very, very lucky that I got to see Let the Right One In at Scream Fest. And, you know, it's just one of those things when you see that movie and, you know, you're kind of like sitting there and you're like, wow, you know, I'm in LA and, you know, you're watching a horror movie as part of this festival. And there's people that you really admire sitting in the crowd watching this really amazing movie with you. Like, there's something to be said for that moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, so for me, that's why that movie always sticks with me. Like, I can remember that moment.
Right.
And it kind of sinks in. Like, it just kind of, and that's what I really like about that movie. Like,
yeah.
It's, you know, I know everybody wants like the English version and it's, you know, but for me, you know, I feel like they can both kind of be seen, you know, sort of separately, if that makes sense.
I do too. When I saw Let Me In, I felt like, well, gosh, it's so similar in a lot of ways that I don't totally understand why remake it at all. But as time has gone on, I find myself not just wanting to revisit Let Me In a lot and liking it a lot more, but that I can almost go with either one depending on what mood I'm in. And that very rarely happens with remakes. Like, it's very rare that I'll say, hey, I'm going to watch The Thing from Another World. I will always pull Carpenter's movie. I won't necessarily go back and watch the original The Fly. I'll always pull Cronenberg's. But in this instance, I kind of go back and forth between the two of them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing, like, again, what I sort of like about where kind of horror is these days is that we actually, again, our generation, we can kind of appreciate that movies can exist separately. Like, you know, I'm sort of, again, in regards to like maybe like the Fright Night remake, mm-hmm. like that movie, when they announced it, I was livid. It was, you know, again, it was another barn burner. I was ready to throw down. And, you know, and again, I went on the set visit and I was even skeptical on the way home. Like, I was just like, no. And I think, you know, for me, what I appreciated again was one, that they didn't try to make the same movie, and that, you know, two, they tried to go with an R rating. I just think, honestly, they had the wrong kid as Charlie Brewster in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, I thought Colin Farrell was actually really good. And, you know, I like sort of the context of setting it in Vegas because it makes sense. Like, if you, you know, if you tried to set something like Fright Night in suburban now, like, you can't put, you know, Jerry Dandridge on Wisteria Lane. Everybody's
right,
so right. Nosy. You know, that story's out there in like, you know, a day. So, you know, I like the fact that they sort of had some thought to it. But again, it's one of these movies that it's like, there's a lot that I really liked about it, but there was a lot that I didn't. And, you know, again, I thought maybe, you know, looking back at it, there could have been a way to kind of make that movie and make it really, really good and stand on its own. And it just doesn't. And unfortunately, that's one of those movies that you just can't not compare it to the original.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not really a fan of the remake, and I tried to be as open-minded as possible, but I felt like every couple of minutes, the original was popping up in my head because it did so many things better, including just the idea, and I talked about this years ago on a show when the movie first came out, that Charlie Brewster's mom worked nights in the original, and that's why he was home alone, and that was such a great choice, and they sort of get rid of that in the remake. And I think setting it in Vegas is an interesting idea because it's this idea, you know, it's the notion of this city is awake all night, but then I don't feel like they ever really do anything with it. It's just like Colin Farrell in a big empty house. I don't know.
Yeah.
The remake kind of bummed me out because I won't say I'm as big a fan as you, but the original Fright Night is definitely one of my favorite horror movies.
Yeah. Have you read anything on the new one?
The new...
Okay, well, it's...
They're remaking it again?
Well, sort of, actually.
Oh, my God.
It's called Fright Night 2 something or other, but it's a sequel to the remake, but it's a totally different story. And this is going to blow your mind. I can't even believe you didn't know this. This is great. This is perfect. So with the movie revolves around Charlie and Amy.
Okay.
And they're just breaking up, but they're going to Romania for a school trip because, you know, all schools, they go to Romania of all places. You know, not France or England or anything like Romania. You know, because movies like Hostel didn't teach anybody anything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so they go there with Evil Ed.
What?
Hey, hold on to that thought. It gets better. It's even better from there. So the three of them go travel for their class trip where they decide they run into a vampire named Jerry. Although Jerry is G-E-R-R-I and it's a woman.
I hate this movie.
Oh, it's even better. Coincidentally enough, Peter Vincent happens to be in Romania as well.
You're
of course.
Kidding.
I'm not. And he's going to come in and help them save the day. I mean, there's just so many things. Like, I don't even know what to say. Like, I mean, I would have been like, okay, you want to do a sequel? Cool. I get it. Whatever. But that just doesn't even make sense to me.
No. That almost sounds like
a joke, right?
Like bad sort of fan fiction that somebody loved the remake so much that they wanted to write their own sequel and submitted it. But, like, really had no idea what they were doing.
It's like they merged the remake with the original Fright Night 2.
Right, which also isn't very good.
You know, I've grown to love that movie for the comedy of it.
Okay.
I will say, Jonathan Grease in that movie, he plays the werewolfy guy.
Yeah, like, he's really the one thing I remember. And the dude turning into bugs at the end. But
who was on X-Files? So that's why I like him, because he was on X-Files, because I'm a nerd and I have to connect everything. But yeah, it was a movie. I actually remember seeing it at the drive-in, hated it as a kid. I mean, because it was totally different than what I was expecting.
Yeah.
As an adult, I sort of, you know, I went and bought the DVD on Amazon. Like, I had to get, like, you know, somebody's probably bootleg copy of it. Mm-hmm. But I pay, like, $20 for this thing. And, of course, now it's, like, on HD on cable every other weekend. But I've actually come to like it more as an adult.
Okay.
And, you know, and if you sort of take it away from what the first movie was and you just kind of put Charlie and Peter in there, you can kind of fill in the blanks without even knowing that first story. And it's a weird movie. I mean, it really is weird. And I think I don't know. I just like the fact that, you know, they weren't doing the same thing. And, you know, but I will say, like, I totally thought the Chuli Carmen's makeup was horrible in this. They made her look like such a dude. And she was so pretty. I mean, she's still pretty now. But, like, her makeup in that was so, like, mannish. And I was like, she's smoking hot. Like, why hide that? Accentuate that. So, and I didn't like the fact that they made Peter into, like, kind of a nut job either, because for me, I felt like that was sort of a disgrace to Roddy, because he was such a brilliant actor. Like, they could have done anything with that character and they just did the wrong thing.
Well, to just sort of reset him, I mean, that the whole first movie is his arc from, you know, being a coward to being brave and doing the right thing. And then we get to the sequel and it's like, ah, he's a coward again. I don't understand, you know, I don't understand sequels that just want to redo the exact same. It's one thing for, like, the Friday the 13th movies or whatever. Of course, those are basically just going to redo the same movie over and over again. But for something like a Fright Night, where the idea is to, I would think, sort of continue the story, why not have the characters start in a place where they ended in the last movie? But
yeah,
I guess that's asking too much.
Again, and that's also why I appreciated the Saw movies, is because there actually was character progression.
There's continuity to a fucking insane degree in the Saw movies, to the point where they have to spend a third of the running time just on flashbacks so that you remember all the stuff that happened in the past movies. And
I actually,
that's one of the things I really like about that series.
We've always sort of had a goal to, like, edit the actual story from beginning to end of the Saw movies.
Yeah.
Like, taking all the movies and deconstructing, like, all of the flashbacks, all of that backstory, and actually doing it all in chronological order. But we started it when 6 was coming out, and now that there's 7, it's like, forget it. There's no way.
Right.
It's way too much. But again, because there was so much thought behind that stuff, but everybody was always just focused on the blood. But, yeah. So, I mean, it's just, you know, horror these days, it's just, it's weird. Like, I like that there really isn't a trend right now, only because it's giving a lot of people opportunities that maybe wouldn't have had it before.
Yeah, it feels like we're sort of in uncharted territory for the first time in a while, almost since Scream sort of brought the horror film back, because there was a trend immediately following Scream, and then there's just been sort of this series of trends, and I feel like for the first time now in close to 20 years, horror is still viable, but there's no obvious trend, and there's that gives room for people to do different kinds of things.
It does. And also, you know, in sort of the sort of against that, it also kind of floods the marketplace too, which for horror fans, it sucks, because it's like you have to kind of start picking and choosing sometimes,
right.
You know, and, you know, and think kind of talking about sort of like, you know, tangible media and stuff. Like for me, being a collector, you know, of stuff, like, I mean, now with the new Halloween Blu-ray, I mean, I'm now going to own Halloween on Blu-ray like 14 times, I think.
Which is after owning it on DVD 6 times, which
exactly.
is after. It's, I cannot believe they're going to make me buy Halloween again.
I know. And now they have new footage since they just did the Blu-ray. So I'm like, is there going to be another new Blu-ray?
For sure.
Like, you know, but I'm not going to not get this one, because I have to see the commentary with Jamie Lee and stuff. Like.
And that, more than anything, that's what's going to make me buy it. And it makes me crazy, too, when they don't duplicate the bonus features, because now I have to have two copies of Halloween sitting on my shelf. I want to be able to just get rid of my old one and keep the new one, but I know they won't have all the same special features, so I have to keep both of them. But yeah, that commentary is the thing that's drawing me to it more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason I have two copies of Halloween 2 on my shelf. Because
you have the Scream Factory and the Universal, right?
Yeah, and have you watched the TV version of Halloween 2?
I have not.
Okay, you have to watch it. Like, seriously, you should just, like, do a drinking game. And it's – I forget what the cues are, but we actually wrote it out. I have it somewhere. But I can't believe it, because for me, like, I remember seeing the original Halloween, like, on a VHS tape. But for me, Halloween 2 was always a movie I saw on TV, because WGN would always play, like, the Halloween movies, like, right around, you know, Halloween.
Right.
So – you know, that was the way that I grew up watching it. And it was so weird watching that, because it is awful. It is such a different movie. And I was like, it blew my mind that was the Halloween 2 I grew up on. And I remember, like, in college watching Halloween 2 thinking, this feels different. But then it was like, I was like, maybe I'm just remembering it wrong. And now realizing, like, how different they were, you have to watch it. I mean, it's like a laugh riot. It's hilarious.
I watched Halloween 2 a couple times last fall, including once I was at a screening of it. And it was not as good as I remembered it being. I used to like it more. I was not loving Halloween 2. And I've talked about this a lot before on the podcast. I'm actually a huge fan of Halloween 4.
I love Halloween 4. Oh,
nice.
My God. Yes. Seriously, the Jamie Lloyd movies are great.
Yes.
And because, you know what? That was the first, like, Halloween was the first Halloween I sort of saw, because, you know, we had a VHS copy of it. 2 and 3 were movies I discovered on TV. So for me, 4 was the first one I actually ever rented. And I remember being so excited. And it's so weird, because I just had this conversation yesterday, but because I actually said I wanted to watch Halloween 4. So that's really funny. But I mean, it was just like this little kid, like, is in so much danger. And It was like, I couldn't even believe, like, I mean, that movie is so awesome. And Sasha Jensen's eyebrows literally are the greatest thing ever to come out of that movie.
You know. I love, too, on the on that 20 Years of Terror documentary, I love finding out that, and I apologize, I don't know their names, Ellie, right?
Ellie Corning, yeah.
Ellie Corning and the girl who ends up fucking Sasha Jensen sort of didn't get along in real life, that there was this weird rivalry between them, and I love the way that that's sort of hinted at, that the two of them, that life imitated art, or vice versa. I'm fascinated by that dynamic.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, the thing is, it's 5 is also, like, a weird movie for me. Because it was just, like, the characters. God, I hated that movie. Like, Tina drove me nuts, like, the first couple times. But it was weird, because I actually had a conversation with somebody, and they were, like, sort of putting it into perspective for me. Like, these are your typical late 80s teenagers. This is how they were. And they were really annoying. And I was like, oh, okay. But, you know, it's definitely no 4. Like, 4 for me, like, the scene on the roof, like yes. the guys driving at the end in the trucks, like, I mean, that was just awesome.
Four is great. And part of the reason I can't forgive five, and I was actually going to bring this up when we were talking about the Saw movies, because one of my problems with horror in general is this notion that, especially for sequels, that we have to kill off characters that audiences love or are invested in, and every series has done it. Friday the 13th did it, and Nightmare on Elm Street did it, and Halloween did it, and Saw did it. You know, that was one of the things about Saw, was as soon as you started to sort of invest in one of the characters, you knew that they were fucked. Every single one of these people is going to die horribly, so why bother investing? And I can't forgive Halloween 5 for killing Rachel. I just can't do it.
I know. And it was just sort of like a throwaway
yes.
moment too. And that character deserved better.
Yes.
You know, if you were going to do to her, you know, if you're going to kill her off, okay. That character deserved some sort of a moment, some kind of respect. Like, you know, it was just sort of a throwaway moment. And that kind right. of was almost a disservice to four. Like,
yeah.
you know, and I mean, again, it's sort of interesting because I think it's what makes horror fans so cool is that we actually have sort of that respect. And it's not like, you know, general population of, you know, moviegoers, they don't care. You know, they don't give a shit. They're just there to watch, you know, people die on a screen. But like, it's interesting because like the people who really like love the genre, they get sort of the fact that you can't just throw away a character like that, that, you know, and everybody else is like, oh, cool. You know, we're going to almost see her naked in the shower. You know?
Well, right. The horror movies that work and that stick with us are the ones that have characters that we invest in. You know, all the best horror movies have those characters that we care about, and so then to turn around and kill them off, and I understand it can be done effectively because there's certainly an element of, hey, no one is safe and trying to keep us on edge, and I understand that in theory, but like you said, there's a disrespect, and Halloween did it over and over again, because Halloween 6 does it with Jamie. Halloween garbage, Resurrection. Was it Halloween Resurrection that does it with Jamie Lee Curtis in, as you said, I mean, the most throwaway way possible. It's just, it shits on everything that we've cared about in this entire franchise.
Literally throwing her away. Yeah. You know what I will say? I kind of like 6, only because it's, you know, it's not, you know, Donald Pleasance, you know, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that one, it was trying to still tie. Here's the thing. 6 had a really big burden. It had to carry into the context of the stories that were established in 4 and 5, mm-hmm. but then it also had to tie into the original movies.
Right.
And you know, that's a really big mantle to carry. And, you know, so I like the fact that, you know, we're seeing, you know, Tommy all grown up, you know, a young Paul Rudd. And, you know, the fact that it tried, you know, I mean, it's by, you know, by no means one of the better sequels in that series, but, you know, it tried. And everything after that was just like downhill for me. Like, I remember being really excited to going and seeing H20. And I was like, okay, I'm here. Great. Let's do this. And it was just like the scene at the end with the axe. I was just like, come on.
Like, when I saw it, I guess that would have been like 98. I remember kind of liking it, feeling like, oh, they kind of played it straight. And this was very post-Scream and everything was sort of ironic and winking. And I felt like, oh, they pretty much played it straight. And then I rewatched it again, maybe a year or two ago. And it does not hold up. I did not love it.
Yeah. Although I will say this, it is really hard for me to dislike a horror movie with LL Cool J. It's part of the reason that I love Deep Blue Sea.
There's a lot of reasons to love Deep Blue Sea.
Actually, that's true. There's about a million and three reasons to love Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, curing Alzheimer's with sharks. Have you seen the Halloween 6, this producer's cut that's gone around? I've never seen it, but supposedly it's a better movie.
Yeah, that's one that's done, I think, by Dan Ferentz, right?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I actually know Dan.
Okay.
So I kind of know some of the stories of what he went through with that movie. I actually haven't seen it, though. He had at one point had actually offered to show me the original script, too, which I was dying to see. Because I just told him I'm still an unabashed fan of that movie, for better or for worse. I mean, again, they destroyed Jamie in that movie. And
in such a mean-spirited way, too.
Oh, that was just the worst. Yeah. And you know what? If that was truly the way that the character was supposed to be, you know, good on Danielle Harris for, like, standing her ground and being like, no.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing it for whatever money you want to offer me.
I almost feel like they made it worse after she turned it down as like a fuck you, you know?
Yeah. Which again was the stupidest thing to do, because I think at that moment was almost the very moment where everybody who loved those movies, 4 and 5, mentally checked out.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, admittedly, like, all the stuff with the baby and the Druidy-looking people and all the weird, like, sort of, like, 70s weird stuff, like, I kind of dug that. Like, I thought it was weird and cool and different. And then when that moment happened, I was like, oh, forget this. Like, but they got me back as soon as, like, they introduced Tommy. Like, I was like, okay, all right, we're back in Haddonfield. Right. And we're sort of, okay, we're back at the houses. Okay, all right, you know. And, again, it's a ridiculous movie. But it tried. And I think, you know, it didn't have Busta Rhymes, but, you know.
Michael Myers ain't no soundbite.
Oh, my God.
I'll ask you this, and this will be the last big question I ask you. What is the worst horror sequel that you love?
Howling 2, Your Sister Is a
Werewolf. Oh, my God. Are you
kidding? Dude, that movie is so awesome. Christopher Lee in a punk rock club. Holy shit.
That movie doesn't even have werewolves in it.
I know. And it has crazy werewolf like sex and stuff. And, like,
that's
Sybil
the only good. Yes, the only
Sybil
good scene.
Owns that movie. Like, yes. She's like, I don't give a fuck if this makes no sense. I look good. And I don't care. You want me covered in fur? Here you go.
The moment where she sort of opens her shirt changed my life as a young man.
Mine too.
But there's nothing else in that movie that I can point to as saying.
Oh, I'm telling you, you have to go back and watch the movie drunk, because it's so good. It was one of these things. I actually recorded it on the DVR, and it was going to expire, so I actually transferred it to a DVD so I could just have it, because you can't buy it. It's like not on Amazon or anything like that.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
I think it might be on VHS. Okay. But yeah, I want – God, Scream Factory, if you're out there, put Howling 2.
Thank God for Scream Factory. They are just crushing it, too. They are the greatest.
I go broke. Like, yeah. That's seriously – I don't even buy new movies anymore. I just buy Scream Factory. That's – you know, and I don't even get – and I'm not even saying that like somebody who gets movies from them on the regular. I'm saying that as a fan. Like, I seriously spend – every month, at least $40, because there's always at least 2 awesome movies that they're putting out.
Yeah, they keep just taking movies, not just, you know, sort of classics that are due for a great release, like they're doing all the Carpenter movies and all that, but then they'll pull something that I just, you know, they're going to put out Night of the Comet, or they put out The Funhouse, or they put out Life Force, and these are movies that, like, I love that not a ton of people I know also love. I'm sort of in a minority, at least in my circle. So to sort of have my affection for those movies validated by Scream Factory, it feels so good. And I'm so excited to have, you know, here's a great Blu-ray edition of Life Force, finally. You know, I'm super excited about that.
Oh, I know. And that's the thing, like, you know, and for me, I'm also discovering movies through there, because I'd never seen, like, The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a great way to see that. And, you know, to be really honest, I never saw The Burning. Like, it was weird. I actually bought it on DVD a couple of years ago, threw it on the shelf, and I just never got around to watching it. But yeah. Getting the Blu-ray, I was like, I'm going to sit down and watch this. And it was so, like, fun. Like, it wasn't what I was expecting at all. Like, I had no ideas going into it. I just knew it was 80s, you know?
Right, right. And it is very 80s.
Oh, like, is it ever. The shorts in that movie, that they had a good shorts budget.
Yeah, and that movie proves once and for all that Holly Hunter was adorable at every age.
Oh, my God. And there's, like, so many actors in that movie that, yeah, like, went on to do really awesome stuff. And I was like, I had no idea. So that's, again, what I love about these movies is that it's, you know, me as somebody who grew up watching these movies, I'm discovering new things. But I can only imagine what it must be like for maybe fans that are, you know, 10 years younger than me that didn't get to grow up with these movies, that maybe now they're really discovering them, which is super cool.
Yeah, and it's cool, again, that they've established themselves as this label. They're sort of like the Criterion Collection of horror movies, because, like you said, they can now put out a movie that maybe not everybody's heard of, and people will be willing to give it a chance just because it has sort of the Scream Factory seal of approval on it, you know? And so that's very cool.
And they're also kind of heroes in a way, because they're also, I mean, nobody was going to put out the cabal cut of Nightbreed.
I know. That's pretty crazy, right?
And I haven't seen it yet, and I'm dying. Like, yeah. I would buy that movie 10 times over just to watch it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the fact that they're doing it, and that's the thing that I really love about it, is that because you know it's from Scream Factory, you know that people that actually care about it are doing it.
Yeah. You know? It screened in Chicago a year or two ago. And I wasn't able to go, and I know that the version that they screened, you know, was a work print, and so had a lot of problems. So I'm really excited to see it, you know, in this great sort of HD transfer and really see it the way that it's supposed to be seen. I'm super excited about that.
Me too. And the thing is, what I love about that movie, and again, it kind of goes back to my love for Cronenberg, but he's so fucking scary in that movie.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Oh my God. I was way too young to have seen Nightbreed when I saw Nightbreed. Like, I mean, I still, the scene in the hotel room, like, I just remember, like, I was horrified. I was absolutely horrified. And then, like, when I found out that that was the guy who directed The Fly,
yeah.
I mean, it was like, it was like my eyes were opened for, like, the first time. I couldn't even believe it. And then it all sort of made sense in a way, too.
That's awesome. All right, well, I guess I should wrap up. I feel bad, but we've talked for almost 2 hours, so I feel like
Oh my God.
I know. So I could keep doing this, though. So hopefully in October we do an entire month of just – we call it Scary Movie Month, and we have this Scary Movie Challenge, and we do all this cool scary movie-related stuff. So hopefully I can talk you into coming back on, and we can do this again.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, definitely.
Do you want to give your Twitter handle so everybody can follow you on Twitter?
Yes, I'm at The Horror Chick.
Well, that's easy enough. So you got at thehorrorchick.blogspot. You got The Horror Chick on Dread Central. You can follow at The Horror Chick. And everybody, if you're in the Chicago area or Chicago adjacent, you should definitely go to Flashback Weekend, which is August 9th through the 11th. Do I have that right?
You do, yes.
Okay, awesome.
And the coolest thing is I'm going to have some stuff to be given away randomly.
Nice.
So you just never know what's going to be tossed out to fans. So I'm really excited. That's like the one thing that I'm very appreciative about my job is that I get to do some really cool stuff, and I get some really cool stuff also. But the thing is, it's like, you know, you can't have – you know, 600 t-shirts in your house. You just can't. So what I do every year is I always collect all of the stuff that I get from, you know, different events and stuff. And then I give it away because I feel like, you know, getting to do the job that I do is kind of like my little treat. So, you know, I'm like, I don't need 14 Evil Dead t-shirts. I need one, but I don't need 14. So I can kind of, you know, sort of spread the wealth. So yeah, I like to give away stuff while I'm there. So
that's very cool. Very cool. Well, I'm excited to see you and hang out with you at Flashback and
absolutely.
And heckle you from the crowd as you present Dracula, Prince of Darkness.
Are you going to start the wave? You should totally start the wave.
I'm going to try and come up with something. I'm going to reinvent the wave. I'm sorry. I'm going to reimagine the wave.
Are you going to remake it or reboot it?
Reboot imagine? I'm going to reboot the reimagining of the wave.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like
So it's going to be something totally new because I hate the original. Like, what's his name from Nightmare on Elm Street? thank you so, so much for being on the podcast. It was a ton of fun to talk to you.
No, it was awesome. Thank you for having me. And yes, let's chat horror in October for sure.
Cool. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. And we will see you next week. Thanks, Heather.
Thanks. We'll be right back.